welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up in this hour, horror programs. Later on, we hear Murder at Midnight from 1946. Right now, it's Inner Sanctum from July 18th, 1949 on CBS. We hear Larry Haynes, Everett Sloan, and Lawson Zerbe in the story Deadly Fair, hosted by Paul McGrath.
This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum for another quiet, restful evening on the homey side. What's that, madam? Oh, the humidity. You feel that? Oh. Well, right this way into the morgue. This cold slab will straighten you out. Oh, too cold. Well, how about a nice hot poker game? Cutthroat. Well, how about a nice sociable game of bridge? No? Oh, I see. Yes, afraid of the stiff competition. Oh, you play. Well, remember, you got to pay up if you lose. We got enough deadheads here.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum mystery, Deadly Fair, was written by Henry Warner and stars Larry Haynes in the role of Angelo with Everett Sloan as Philip.
Just a moment. Don't settle back in your chair. You're going for a ride. Ready? It's the dark hour before dawn. Along the tree-lined suburban highway, the headlights of the speeding sedan poke two long yellow fingers through the swirling dew. Behind the wheel of the sedan, a local taxi, sits Angelo Minetti, the cab driver, the cold nose of a madman's gun pressed against the back of his neck, wondering by what fate a man like himself will live through the beachheads at Salerno and Anzio, only to come home to die like this. Wondering how long before the madman's trigger finger bends in a nervous twitch and makes a widow out of his wife, Josie, and a fatherless boy of a 7-year-old son, Johnny.
I'm sorry I yelled at you tonight, Johnny. Sorry I made you cry, but if I ever get out of this, you can have all the crayons you want. 100 boxes of crayons, and you can mark up all the walls. You can mark up the whole house. Pray for me, Johnny. I can't die like this. What a break. Just because I was a good guy and changed shifts with Connolly. But I guess it was just in the cards for me instead of Connolly. Just in the cards to be working nights and meet the 225 when it pulled into Larchmont.
Taxi! Here you are, ma'am.
You going to the manor?
Yes, ma'am.
I took a quick look up and down the station platform to watch for stragglers. Bad business leaving a local citizen stranded in the middle of the night. Then I saw him coming towards me carrying a suitcase. He must have got off from the first car.
Is this a taxi?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I can't tell. These suburban taxis look like private cars.
Where to, sir?
You go to New Rochelle? I slept past my station.
Well, good thing you only slept by one station. Sure, I'll take it. If you don't mind riding while I drop this lady.
Thanks.
I took the mic off the dashboard. Called the office. 64 calling radio taxi. 64 calling radio taxi.
Come in, 64.
Station of Manor, then Rochelle.
Check.
I put the mic back on the dashboard hook and settled down for the run.
How are you boys doing since you installed the two-way radio service?
Oh, fine, fine.
Must say, it's improved the service. Is it dependable?
Oh, yes, ma'am. No trouble at all. Circuit's always open for us to receive messages. I want to talk back. I just pressed the button on the hand mic. 30-something. What's the address?
76 Manor Lane.
Calling 64. Radio taxi calling 64. Hey, Angelo, listen to me.
What's eating you, Louie? Place on fire?
Hey, Angelo, just got a police call. Don't pick up a guy with a tan raincoat. The cops are looking for him. He's a killer.
Take it easy, Louie. Now, what's this you're saying about a killer?
What's
he say? The cops say he got on at Grand Central with a ticket to New Rochelle.
So what?
But listen, Angelo. The guy didn't get off at New Rochelle. You pick up someone with a tan raincoat?
I didn't dare turn around to look. To see if the man in the back seat had a raincoat. You could almost hear the woman sitting beside him holding her breath. And then I recalled the guy as he walked down the station platform. I recalled plain that he did not have a raincoat, only a suitcase.
Will you pipe down, Louie? You better get some coffee at the diner. If you fall asleep, you'll be having nightmares. Roger.
Good thing I have no raincoat, madam.
Yes,
strange that all that should stand in the way is a raincoat.
How's that?
Driver, right there, please. In front of the next street light. How much is it?
35 cents.
Thanks.
Your change.
She just waved her hand as if telling me to keep the change from a dollar. She, seems kind of scared, if you ask me.
Are you?
Scared? What for?
The killer.
Ah, that Louie, he gets excited about everything. Always adding a little out of his own head. What's the address in North Shore?
Bayside Lane, 36.
36 Bayside Lane?
Yes. Know the place?
Off Hillside Road, long driveway.
That's it.
I drove a party up there from the manor tonight.
What did he look like?
Well, I didn't say it was a hint, did I?
Well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Tall chap, slick looking, mustache.
Well, look, I didn't talk out of turn, did I, mister?
Not at all. I rather expect I'll find him still there. What's your name?
Angelo Minetti.
Mine's Baker. But don't let me embarrass you, Angelo. It's quite all right. That party you drove to my house is seeing my wife. Isn't that what you think?
Oh, you got me wrong, mister. I don't think nothing.
Don't you really? Lots of others think so. Rather common gossip, as they say. But I'm not angry. Not at all. I'll take care of everything once I get home.
Calling 64. Radio taxi calling 64. Hey, Minetti.
Come in, Louie.
Got some more dope on that killer. He got into Grand Central on the train from Albany. Porter in the club car told the cops a guy was making cracks about having a gun and taking care of the wife and the boyfriend.
Well, so what? What are you bothering me with it for? Go call the Daily News or the Mirror.
Well, wait a minute. Now, here's what I want to tell you. The cops at Mamaroneck got on the train and found the raincoat hanging on a hook in the first car. Conductor thinks it was left by a guy who got off at Larchmont with a suitcase. How about that fare you picked up?
There was a gun in my fare's hand. And the gun was at the side of my head. His finger was on his lips, warning me.
You did say Rochelle, didn't you?
I could see the trigger finger bending. And his head shaking from side to side to tell me to say no. No, Louie. I had two. One to the manor, the other to Rockdale. Not Rochelle. I didn't get it right the first time. Forgot to call you. Also, he didn't have a suitcase.
Oh, that's a relief. Say, how's about coming back to the shack so as I can get a bite at the diner?
Yeah, sure thing. Soon as I'm free. This guy wants me to wait for him. Take him back to the station.
Roger.
Nice work, Angelo.
I got a wife and kid to think of, mister. So want to go to 36 Bayside Lane?
That's right. Better slow down. There's Bayside Lane right ahead. All right, this'll do. I wouldn't like it if they heard us coming up the driveway.
It'll be a dollar and a quarter, sir.
Get out, Angelo.
You want me to get out?
That's right. You're coming in with me. To be my witness.
Witness? What for?
Divorce, maybe.
Oh, no, please, Mr. Baker, that's not right. I can't afford to get mixed up like this. Ruin my taxi.
Get out. And don't slam the door.
Yes, sir.
Carry my bag, please.
He steered me with the gun in my bag. Slowly picking each step in the dark across the lawn shielded by a high hedge and around to the back of the house, to the kitchen. The lights were on, and we could see his wife and the boyfriend making themselves some bacon and eggs.
All right, Angelo. Pull open the door.
What?
Hello, Doris.
Philip.
Hello, Walter.
What are you doing with that gun?
Please, Philip.
Excuse me while I close the door, Walter. No use waking the neighbors. Oh, Doris, this is Angelo.
Walter?
Angelo.
The introductions were polite, all right, but deadly. And he looked like he was enjoying it, a big joke. But there was nothing funny about that crazy grin on his face and the way he kept waving the gun around at the three of us.
Well, Walter?
Philip, please, you frighten me.
Walter's not frightened. He never was. Of me. Isn't that so, Walter?
Well, why don't you answer?
There's nothing to say.
Doris, do you love Walter? Come now.
Of course.
And you, Walter, do you love Doris?
Yes.
You dirty liar.
Doris, please.
He's lying, Doris. I know he's lying. He wouldn't go around bragging how he sees you every time I go out of town if he really loved you.
That's not true.
We're going to be married.
Oh, married? Not until you become a widow, Doris. I'll never give you a divorce. Or are you planning to divorce me?
All right, Philip. You found me here and you have a witness. What are you going to do about it?
I came back from Albany tonight to kill you.
Philip!
But I'll give you just one more chance. If I ever hear that you're trying to see Doris again behind my back, I swear I'll kill you. And Angelo here can be my witness that I warned you. Remember that, Angelo.
Yes.
You got me wrong, Philip. Sure, I've been seeing Doris, but I never went around talking about it.
Don't come any closer, Walter.
I said to Doris, let's tell him.
Give me that gun. Let go. Let go,
Walter. Give me that gun.
Philip, please stop it. Stop it.
Doris.
The three of us stood there, paralyzed. Looking down on the still body of Mrs. Baker, her eyes glassy and blue, her blonde hair soaking up the blood from the hole in her head. One look was enough for the three of us to know that she was dead.
You killed her, Philip. I killed her. No, Walter. You killed her. Didn't he, Angelo?
Two of them stood there, glaring at one another across the body of Mrs. Baker.
Yes. You killed her, Walter. The gun was in my hand, but you killed her. If you hadn't tried to take the gun away from me, where are you going?
Phone the police.
The police?
Yes.
Put down that phone. Put it down!
Don't you think you ought to put that gun away now?
He's right, Mr. Baker.
I don't think he even heard it. He kneeled down beside the body of his wife and stared at her tenderly. Suddenly, his mouth started to move like he was choking for air, and his face twisted in angry pain and hate as he looked up at Walter. I could see Walter sensing it too, realizing that Mr. Baker was gone out of his mind. There was a heavy glass ashtray by the phone. I could see Walter slowly reaching for it. Mr. Baker looked up and jumped back as Walter threw it.
You hold up him! You stay out of this, Angelo!
Don't shoot! Don't!
Doctor! Angelo! Doctor!
You're going to die, Walter! Die like Doris!
Angelo! Help me! Doctor!
Don't bother, Angelo. He won't need a doctor.
Stop me!
No, don't do it. Mr. Baker, give him a chance. Please, give him a chance.
Doesn't need a doctor now, Angelo, does he? Go on. Bend over him. See if he needs a doctor.
He's dead.
Yes. Now they're both dead. Both dead.
What do we do, Mr. Baker?
Do? Well, what is there to do?
The police. We ought to call the police.
They'll take me away from Doris. I don't want to leave her. No, I mustn't leave Doris.
Now, please. Please, Mr. Baker, won't you give me the gun?
The gun? No. No, I got the gun to protect myself from Walter. But I'm not afraid of Walter anymore.
He's dead. Walter's dead.
That's right. Doris is dead and Walter's dead. We can't leave them here. We must take them away to a nice, quiet place where they can be alone forever. You take them away in your car, Angelo.
My car?
Yes, Angelo. You must do as I tell you. It will be their funeral car.
The kitchen was next to the garage. And he made me drive my car into the garage.
Open the trunk compartment, Angelo.
He kept the gun on me and followed me into the kitchen. He pointed to her first. I picked her up and carried her. Try not to look at her. Telling myself I ought to grab the jack handle in the trunk compartment and swing it on him, but I didn't do it. I was afraid. I was afraid I'd never live to see Josie and Johnny again. I placed Mrs. Baker in the trunk gently. And then he made me go back for the other one.
Push him in, Angelo. Or his coat will stick through the door when you close it. That's better. Very good. Close the trunk.
As I locked the trunk door, I grabbed the handle and bit my lip to keep from passing out.
Don't you feel well?
Hot. I'll be all right.
Yes. You'll be all right as soon as we hit the road. The fresh country air will straighten you out. Get behind the wheel, please.
I got in and he got in the back seat.
I must remind you, Angelo. I'll be right here behind you with this gun in the back of your neck. Don't try to trick me.
Radio taxi calling 64. Hey, Minetti, why don't you answer? What's the idea?
Don't answer, Angelo.
Call me on the phone if your mic is out of order.
Ignore him, Angelo. Start driving.
Where to, Mr. Baker?
Just keep going. But stay off the Hutchinson Parkway. Patrol cars, you know. Take the back roads. You'll find a nice, quiet place for them.
We went north on the post road. Louis's call breaking in on us every minute or so.
Calling 64. Radio taxi calling 64.
Persistent fellow, isn't he?
Well, he's sorry. Expect me back to relieve him so he can go down to the diner for a bite.
Pass me that cigarette lighter on the dashboard. Don't you hear me? I want the cigarette lighter.
Oh, it's not working.
Have you got any matches?
In my pocket.
Well, let me have them.
I reached into the side pocket of my jacket, fumbling through my handkerchief and keys for the pack of matches. And then my fingers touched the crayon. A small piece of black crayon, no bigger than an inch long, with a paper wrapping. The small piece of crayon I'd taken away from Johnny after I yelled at him and made him cry for marking up the wall.
What about those matches?
Yeah. Here you are. I handed over the matches. But the piece of crayon was in my palm, concealed and held tight by my little finger and the one next to it. He lit his cigarette.
You want a cigarette, Angelo?
No, thanks. There ever was a time in my life I needed a smoke, it was then. But I was trembling with an idea. An idea to make my microphone stay open so Louis could hear me without Mr. Baker getting wise. But I had to hold on to the crayon. I couldn't take a chance reaching for a cigarette. I might drop that crayon. I waited for Louis to call me again.
Calling 64. Hey, Minetti. You all right? Call me from a phone if you can hear me.
Say, Mr. Baker, maybe I better answer him.
Why?
Well, he might think I'm in a wreck and he'll have the cops start looking for me.
Yes. Yes, you're quite right. Very well, talk to him. But be careful what you tell him.
I picked the microphone off the dashboard with the hand that held the piece of crayon. 64, calling radio taxi.
Where the heck you been, Angelo?
Let me explain, Louis.
He's sitting here without a relief. Fine pal, depending on you. Get back here. I'm going down to the diner.
I kept gabbing to Louis and forcing the crayon into the button on the mic, right into the hole that housed the spring button, hoping the paper wrapping on the crayon would wedge the button and keep my sending circuit open. Louis, I'm fixing a flat. Must be a loose wire. I didn't hear you until just now. Be back as soon as I can. Roger. I put the mic back on the dashboard hook, praying the crayon wedge would hold. As long as that button was wedged down, Louis couldn't talk to me. As voice came through, I'd know the crayon had slipped out. I waited. Seconds seemed like hours. No word from Louis, so the wedge was holding. I raised my voice so it would carry the 2 feet between me and the mic. Mr. Baker, are you going to kill me, too?
Kill you?
Yeah. Yeah, like you killed Mrs. Baker and Walter?
I've been thinking about what I ought to do with you, Angelo.
No, don't kill me, please. I got a wife and kid. I'll play dumb. I swear I will. I'll never tell anyone that you killed two people. Where are we going to hide the bodies? We'll run out of gas if we keep going like this.
I know where we'll go. Lake Hatoma. Doris loved Lake Hatoma. We used to go there weekends long ago.
Where is Lake Hatoma?
About 40 miles from here.
40 miles? I knew I had to find some way to stall them. The range of my cab's transmitter was about 30 miles. If I ever got out of range, I was done for. I had no way of knowing whether Louis had left the office or if he caught my first words telling him about my danger.
Do you know how to get to Lake Hatoma from here, Mr. Baker?
Roughly, I know we used to go past White Plains.
Well, I got a map.
Good. Stop the car. Take a look at it.
Now, let's see. White Plains. Yeah, Lake Hatoma. There it is. We go up here and then... Uh-huh. I know where it is. Sure.
All right, let's go. We'll go the most direct way. No detours, mind you.
Oh, no, sir. We're on Weaver Street now. We keep going up Weaver Street till we get into Old Mamaroneck Road.
That sounds right, but hurry. I'm getting very tired. Step on the gas.
I heard him, but I played dumb.
Don't you hear me? I said let's go faster.
Yeah, sure. Sure, anything you say, Mr. Baker. But you think it's smart? We're doing 50 now.
Not very fast in the country.
Well, county patrol cars are all through this section. We'll get caught speeding.
That's quite all right. I've paid the fine. Faster, Angelo. That's better. 60. 65. 70. Faster. It'll soon be daylight, and I'm very tired. I wonder if Doris is tired.
Say, what did I tell you? This is Weaver Street. And then into Old Mamaroneck Road. Oh. Hear that?
Patrol car?
I told you. Here comes our speeding ticket.
Slow down. But remember, I'll have the gun in my coat pocket. Let me do the talking. Just accept the ticket and we'll be on our way.
All over!
The patrol car let me roll ahead and swung in behind us and we came to a stop.
Where do you think you're going? You were doing 80. Let's see your license.
It's my fault, officer. I asked him to...
Yeah, what for?
Well, there's been a death in my family. My wife.
Sorry. Well, I have to give the driver the ticket.
He looked at my license in the beam of the patrol car headlight. And he started making out the ticket. And then in the side mirror of my cab, I could see another cop get out of the patrol car with a gun in his hand. And I saw him sneak down on the right side of the cab. He stuck the gun through the open back window just as Mr. Baker saw him.
Don't move.
What?
Too bad we couldn't take him in.
Oh, it held, Johnny. It held.
Say, how come this guy didn't get wise your microphone circuit was open?
You want to know? You really want to know? I'm leaving the house to go to work, see? In the hall, my kid, Johnny, is marking up the walls with crayon. I yell at him, and I make him cry. I take the crayon away, and that's what kept the mic open. Hey, look here. You see? The crayon's still holding the buttons down. Hey, you got any kids?
Yeah, why?
You think I done right? Yelling at Johnny?
It's just goes to show you a fella can do a lot worse than stopping in the middle of the night for a lovely siren. As you fathers, next time you find Junior's crayon scrawls all over the house, he means well. Just trying to show you the handwriting on the wall. Oh, this reminds me of a fella I know who's crazy about baseball. When the warden asked him what he wanted for a last request, he said he'd like to watch a game from the scaffold. But they called it after the sixth. so he could enjoy a seventh inning stretch.
Sanctum was heard in the United States over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, and has been rebroadcast for servicemen and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS radio broadcast from July 18, 1949. One of radio's great thriller programs that had been on the air for about 9 years at the point of the broadcast we just heard, part of CBS radio's Monday nights at 8 o'clock. 16 million people had tuned in for that episode. Thank you for tuning in to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now we bring you Murder at Midnight with the story Wherever I Go. Heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on October 7th, 1946.
Murder at Midnight.
That gun won't do you any good. Besides, you're pointing it the wrong way.
I'm pointing it right between your eyes.
That's what I mean.
Witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes.
How?
You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Wherever I Go. Midnight. Tales of Mystery and Terror by Masters of the Macabre. Our story, A Study in Crime and Retribution, is by William Morwood. Its title, Wherever I Go. The music room of an old country mansion. Seated at the piano, playing with the skill of an accomplished musician, is Gordon Ormsby. Engrossed in what he is doing, he is not aware his wife, Ellen, has come in until...
For goodness sakes, Gordon, when are you going to stop that pounding?
What? Well, I thought you enjoyed music, my dear.
I do when it's well played. Oh, don't be childish. She might have a little consideration for my headache.
You and your headaches. There's nothing whatever wrong with you. The doctors have as good as told you that. It's all in your mind. The affectation of a silly, rich woman.
Lucky for you, I am rich. Or where would you be now?
Someplace where I'd amount to something.
Huh?
I had talents when I married you, Ellen. I could have been a great musician or a great painter or a writer.
You were what you are now, what you always will be. A dilettante, a dabbler.
It's your money that ruined me, softened me up, robbed me of my ambition.
If you hate my money so much, there's nothing to prevent you walking out on it.
I will. Someday?
Not if I know you. You'll stick around as long as I have a penny left. Oh, my head.
Oh, you poor, poor darling.
Oh, I don't expect sympathy from you, but... Oh, when I feel like this, I could kill myself.
Huh. That would be too much to hope for.
Wouldn't it be nice for you, Gordon? Little me out of the way. And all my wicked money to spend exactly as you pleased. But don't worry. I'll live to a ripe old age. Just to spite you.
I'd never thought of it before. Her dying. Never. But after that, I couldn't get it out of my head. There was so much I could do with her money. I could go abroad. Study. But first, I had to get rid of her. It was dangerous even to think about, but I conceived a plan and developed it carefully, slowly, step by step. Ellen, we've got rats in the cellar. I saw signs of them today.
How awful. We must do something about it.
Ellen, have you done anything about those rats?
I ordered some stuff from the drugstore.
Well, there's only one thing that's any good, and you'll have to get a prescription for that. Arsenic. Let's eat home on Thursday, Ellen.
Oh, but it's a servant's night out, and we always go to a restaurant.
I know, but I want to try my hand at cooking up something.
Well, it's sure to be poison, but all right.
We ate dinner at home on Thursday, the two of us alone together. Afterwards, Ellen complained of a headache and went up to her room. I followed a little later.
This is a surprise.
I brought you a cup of cocoa, my dear, to help put you to sleep.
That's suspiciously thoughtful of you, Gordon.
I'm afraid it's still too hot to drink. I'll put it down here.
What have you done to your hand?
What?
It's all bandaged up.
Oh, I scalded it in the kitchen. It's a nuisance, too. I wanted to write tonight.
What are you working on now, Shakespeare? Your memoirs?
No, dear. I don't expect to die for a while yet. No, it's a story about a girl suffering from an incurable disease who commits suicide.
Sounds morbid to me.
Oh, but it's not. I'm making it very tender and beautiful. As a matter of fact, I did mean to write the death scene tonight. With this hand, I'm... Say, Ellen, would you help me out?
How?
Well, I've got the girl's suicide note all set in my mind. But I can't write with this. Would you write it down? While I dictate it?
Oh, do it yourself tomorrow.
Oh, please. It'll only take a minute. Please.
Oh, all right. Where's some paper?
Here.
But that's my very best stationery. I hate to waste it.
It won't be wasted. Ready?
Yes.
Here goes. It's, I can't stand the pain any longer. Nobody knows how much I've suffered. Death will be peaceful compared to this.
Wait a minute.
What? What's wrong?
You're going too fast.
Oh.
Death will be... What?
Peaceful compared to this. Forgive me for what I'm doing, but this is the only way out. Signed...
Yes?
Ellen.
What?
I named her that, dear, because she reminded me of you, so noble in her suffering... I thought you'd be pleased.
Well, I'm not. You'll have to think of some other name.
All right. Jane.
Jane?
You remember Jane Turner, the girl I was going with when I met you? I don't think she'd mind.
But I would. There. It's signed Ellen.
Thank you, my dear. You don't know how much this means to me.
Oh, my head's splitting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Coco? Drink it. That should end your headache. Drink it, Ellen.
Tastes queer.
Well, I couldn't find the sugar, so I sweetened it with maple syrup.
Well, I don't suppose it'll kill me.
Drink it all. Drink it all.
There. Oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, the pain. Gordon, do something. Why are you...
You won't be long now, Ellen.
You mean
that arsenic
you...
That you bought for the rats.
You're mad. They'll hang you for this.
No, Ellen. Oh, no. You have left a note behind. It's a clear case of suicide. I was shaking all over. Yet my nerves had to be steady for what lay ahead of me. My own life depended on it. Music. Music. That would relax me. The piano. I raced downstairs for the music room, but before I reached it, I heard the playing. I pushed open the door. A man was sitting there. A man I'd never seen before, but who was somehow vaguely familiar.
Hello.
Who are you?
Don't you know? Well,
of course not. What are you doing here?
There was nobody at the piano. I didn't think you'd mind.
Well, I do mind. How'd you get in? The door's locked.
Is it? I didn't notice.
Breaking and entering, huh? I've got a good mind to call the police.
I'm sorry you're so suspicious. Still, I realize the strain you must be under.
What do you mean by that?
I'm afraid I'm interrupting you in business vital to both of us. I'll call again some other time.
Oh, wait. You can't leave like this. At least tell me your name.
I have many different names. When the time comes, you can call me by any one of them. Goodbye.
I put the stranger out of my mind. Too much depended on the telephone call I had to make. A single slip-up now, and a rope was waiting for me. I dialed with shaking fingers. Dr. Sampson, this is Gordon Ormsby. You must come at once. Ellen is dead. I think she's taken poison.
It worked out. Just as I'd planned. Just as I'd hoped it would. The doctor's visit, the police, the inquest, no false moves, no suspicions. I became the sole inheritor of a large estate and a free man. I moved out of the old house and into a hotel suite in town. I don't know when it started to happen, but I first knew that something was wrong. When my fingers would no longer obey me at the piano.
Nothing but calm.
Or rather,
nothing but discords. I decided that my nerves were overstrained, that I needed a rest. I figured a trip somewhere would do me good. I went to the telephone to order my car brought around first thing in the morning. But before I picked up the receiver... Yes?
I'm going with you, Gordon.
Who is this?
Your friend.
I'll
see you first thing in the morning.
But...
Operator,
you cut me off. I was making a very important call.
There must be some mistake, sir. There was no call on your line.
I didn't wait. I couldn't. I packed that evening. I slipped a gun into my pocket. I left the hotel. By 11 o'clock, I was far out in the open country, driving west. The night was pitch black, and every mile I burrowed further into the darkness. Then suddenly, a terrible conviction came over me. I wasn't alone.
I'm coming up front now, Gordon.
You?
I said I was coming with you.
When did you get in this car?
I've been here right along. You drive well, Gordon. A cool head and a steady hand. But then you had to have them, didn't you?
What does that mean?
I was just thinking out loud. The money's nice, but music means a lot too, doesn't it?
Oh.
A pity that went sour on you.
Look, I don't know who you are or what you're talking about.
And yet you proved a point to Ellen. You proved that you were an artist in a way, even though she couldn't live to appreciate it. Her death was your masterpiece.
The sweat stood out on my forehead. My mouth was dry. I didn't want it this way. One murder was enough to haunt me. But he left me with no alternative. He knew too much. Somewhere along that road, I had to kill the stranger.
Yes, the mysterious stranger seems to know a great deal. Is it possible he knows even more than Gordon suspects about his plan for...
Murder at midnight.
Stretch of road with no sign of life. At last the headlights found it, a valley with trees growing down to the edge of the road. The stranger seemed asleep, but he stirred as I jammed on the brakes.
Hey, what's wrong, Gordon?
Must have a flat. The wheel feels funny. Would you mind having a look?
That would be very unwise for me.
Why?
You have a gun in your pocket. I would make a perfect target out in the headlights.
Well, since you're so suspicious. Here, take it.
You amuse me, Gordon. However...
How do they look?
All right on this side.
I'm sure it's one of the front tires.
I'll see the other side.
I got him. He was standing squarely in front of the radiator when I got him. Just to make sure, I backed the car over his body. I dragged him across the ditch and into the woods. I dug a shallow grave with a tire iron, hacking in among the roots and the rocks. And then I covered him over. I got back into the car. I needed a drink. And when I came to a juke joint along the highway, I stopped.
All right. What's yours, mister?
Scotch, straight.
You been driving hard, mister?
Why?
You look all in.
Give me another shot. No, wait. Look, I'll buy the bottle.
I don't always want to sell. You know, scotch is hard to get around here.
I'll pay for it. I took the bottle over to a booth and began putting it away. I felt better, warm inside. It was going to be all right after all. The stranger was dead, and they'd never find his body. I was in the clear with nothing to worry about.
Help a poor blind man. Help a blind man.
Something about that blind man's stick that got on my nerves. He came up to my table.
Help the old blind man, please.
Get away from here.
Please, sir, if you'd be so kind.
Will you get away?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I don't want any favors from anyone.
I said, be it.
I'm going, but you shouldn't have done that.
What's going on here? What's the idea of shoving Nettie?
He was annoying me. Then I saw him. He had the blind man by the elbow and was leading him toward the door. The stranger.
What's the matter with you, mister? Who are you staring at?
There. Don't you see him?
Oh, blind Ned? Well, sure.
No. The man with him, opening the door.
There's nobody with him. Blind Ned don't need nobody. He's been going in and out of here by himself for years.
But it was he. I knew it was. I'd killed him, buried him, and... Well, was he dead or wasn't he? I had to know. I drove back up the road. There were the trees and the broken weeds and the ditch through which I'd dragged the body. I walked carefully among the leaves, searching for the grave.
Hello there.
What?
What you doing?
Oh, who are you?
State trooper. Saw your car parked down the road, followed you in.
Well, I'm looking for my watch. I lost it here this afternoon at a picnic. I didn't realize it until I got home, so of course
sure,
I turned around.
Sure, I'll help you.
Oh, no, please, don't bother.
No bother. I got a flashlight here.
Well, it's awfully nice of you, but I don't think...
Hey, what's this?
What? Where?
Ground's all scraped up into a... Looks like a grave.
Well, what would a grave be doing here?
That's what I'd like to know. Give me a hand, will you? Fresh dirt and rocks digs easy. What's the matter? Scared?
Oh, no. It's just that...
down to the bottom anyhow. Oh. Well, I'll be...
What is it?
It's a grave, all right. But if there was ever a body in it, it's gone now.
I had only one idea after that. To get away. To get away as far away as possible. I drove like a wild man the rest of the night and all next day, stopping only for gas. Finally, I just couldn't drive any farther. I stopped at a small hotel and went up to the desk to register.
Sign here, please.
I'm driving across country and I've got to start first thing in the morning.
Certainly, Mr.
Ormsby.
Ormsby. What time would you like to be called?
At daylight. And another thing, I don't want to be disturbed under any circumstances.
Yes, sir.
That's important. No matter who wants to see me, on what excuse, I don't want to be disturbed.
I understand, Mr. Ormsby. Now, if you follow the court...
The elevator doors were just closing when I saw him. He'd come in from the street and was walking across the lobby to the desk. I reached my room, dismissed the bellhop, and locked the door. With a shaking hand, I picked up the telephone.
Yes, clerk?
This is Mr. Ormsby. I thought I recognized a friend of mine in the lobby. A man about the same height and build as myself. Dressed in a gray suit.
I am afraid...
Well, he came in right after me. I haven't seen him in some time, and well, I've forgotten his name. Would you mind looking in the register and telling me what it is?
Just a minute now, look. Here we are. Your signature, Mr. Ormsby, and then...
Yes?
I'm sorry, sir. There is something, but the name's blotted. I can't make it out.
I knew now there was no escape. I took the money from my billfold and piled it on the table. I examined my revolver to make sure it was loaded. And then I sat and waited. A few minutes before midnight, the knock came. Come in.
Hello. You act as if you were expecting me.
I was. The only thing I'm not sure about is what you want. Or rather, how much.
You should know.
All the cash I've got's on the table. Nearly $500.
Ellen left you a good deal more than that.
All right, I'll write you out a check. Name the amount.
Everything you possess.
What? Are you crazy? Do you honestly think, after the risks I took, the risks I'm still taking, I'd give everything away to a cheap blackmailer?
Murder is an expensive hobby, Gordon.
Well, not that expensive. If you want to be reasonable, say $50,000.
I'm afraid there's no compromise. And I'm not just talking about money.
Listen, this is your last chance. $50,000 or...
Or what, Gordon?
Or you don't leave this room alive.
You tried to kill me once before, remember?
No, I lost my head. The car only stunned you, and I didn't make sure that you were dead. It'll be different this time.
It's always going to be different, isn't it, Gordon? When you disposed of Ellen, you were going to lead such a rich, beautiful life. Mm-hmm. But what happened to it? Your music went. You couldn't play.
Oh, shut up.
And then your heart went. You struck out at an old blind man.
Listen, you.
There isn't very much left now, except your mind. And that's starting to go, too. Sometimes you see me, sometimes you don't.
I see you now. Large as life. But do you see this?
That gun won't do you any good. Besides, you're pointing it the wrong way.
I'm pointing it right between your eyes.
That's what I mean.
But you... He was gone. Yes, gone. Nowhere in the room. Then I heard the rapping at the door. In a daze, mechanically, I opened it.
Anything wrong, mister?
What? Who are you?
The house detective. I thought I
heard... Oh, you must have seen him. He must have run past you in the corridor.
Who?
The stranger, the man who was in my room.
Oh, I did. Hey, be careful of that gun.
Well, I had to shoot him. He was threatening me. He was standing over there when I let him have it.
Oh, yeah? What did he look like?
About my height and build, wearing a gray suit.
Like the one you're wearing?
Huh? Oh. Oh, yes.
I thought so. Look.
At what?
The mirror. You shot at your own reflection.
You mean...
Now do you know who I am, Gordon?
There, didn't you hear him?
Hear what? What are you talking about?
No. No, you wouldn't hear. Only I would. And now I do know who and what he is. I know why I couldn't escape him. Here. Here, take this gun. I want to give myself up.
Give yourself up?
My name is Gordon Ormsby. I killed my wife. I poisoned her. I made it look like suicide. And there never was any trial.
Oh... I get it, sure,
it was a perfect
sure.
crime. At least, I thought it was a perfect crime until he came into the picture.
Now, don't you worry about it one bit, Mr. Ormsby. You just
wait
come
a
along with
wait
me.
Wait a minute. You think I'm making it up. But I'm crazy, don't you?
No,
you
no.
do think so. But it's true. Every word of it.
Sure, I got a good friend who's a doctor. You tell him
doctor.
All about...
No. No, he won't believe me either. Nobody will believe me. They'll all think that I'm mad. And, oh, don't you see? That's why I have to give myself up. Because that's the only way I can get away from him. If you hang me. But if you don't...
They won't, Gordon. They'll put you away. And wherever you go, I'll be there too. Remember that? wherever you go.
Taking him firmly by the arm, the detective leads the struggling Gordon out into the corridor. A corridor that grows darker and darker until it is completely black. Somewhere in that blackness, a voice is whispering. Whispering. And it continues to whisper until it is drowned by a clock striking 12 for
murder at midnight.
Kroger. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
Murder at Midnight, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 7th, 1946, from the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.